I came to Harvard County to Aberdeen, Maryland in 1917. My father met me over in Washington on the train and came with him from Washington to Aberdeen. The first thing I noticed when entering Bremer was the Bremer Seltzer Tower. You know, the tower with the Bremer Seltzer, big Bremer Seltzer bottle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then came on to Aberdeen. We settled in Aberdeen and we lived there about 6 years. And I went to school, of course, I went to school in Virginia, both in the rural school and in the Staunton, Virginia school.
Mm.
And for the years I lived there, until I was about 10 years old. So I was about 10 years old when I came to Aberdeen. Then I took up school in Aberdeen, land of Maryland.
Mm.
So I've had my boyhood days in Aberdeen, hunting, preaching, and doing everything a boy would do in those days. Ice skating on the ponds that used to be available. Ice ponds, you know, they don't have them anymore.
Mm.
And because the ice was needed for the locomotives taking on water on the move, you know,
mm-hmm.
speeding. The ponds had them for ice houses. Cut the ice in the wintertime and store the stuff away.
Oh.
Across, up in Aberdeen, across this pond, was a big dealer in that business at that time, about 1917, 1918,
19.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
My dad worked at the
improvement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did Aberdeen, was that already started, or did
he came to Aberdeen from in 1916 with the contractors, when he was contracting and putting up the buildings.
Oh.
And when that was all finished, he went over into a government job. He worked at Ontario Tar in 1937.
Hmm.
He retired from Edgewood Arsenal and transferred in 1920 from Aberdeen to Edgewood, and then worked at Edgewood until he retired in 1947. He died in 1947.
Mm.
He lived a couple of months after he retired.
Hmm.
Mm.
And so, let's see, when you lived in Aberdeen, were you right in the town or did you live out on
the... No, we lived right in the town. Mm.
Mm. How much has it, what was it like then? Was it
well, it was just a little village-like town. It had a sidewalk on one side and the other side was undeveloped as far as sidewalk is concerned. And as I remember, the sidewalk was a big slate slabs about 4 feet by 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Laid end to end, up through from the B&O Railroad down to the main downtown Aberdeen, what we call downtown. That's where the shopping as John Terry's hardware store and other business places.
Mm-hmm.
And first time I ever heard a radio was right there in Terry's store, about 1921. I had to stand in line a week before I could even hear a couple words. Had earphones, you know.
Oh.
They didn't have speakers in that when they first started out.
Hmm.
On the radio. Just had a big console there, and you just put these earphones on, and they kept kind of on the static there.
Mm-hmm.
And that Pennsylvania station, Pittsburgh KDKA, I think it was, something like that.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I kept going down there every day until finally my turn came on. Of course, most of them were men, well, a lot of boys too, but most of them were men on here too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Turing was the only one had, he had a hardware business, and so he set himself up in the business.
Hmm.
Selling radios and other things.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. After you got out of school, what did you go into?
Well, I worked on the Route 40, which is now Route 7, for summer months.
Hmm.
With the contractor. So like a water boy and kind of jack of all trades, I could drive a truck, so
mm-hmm.
a light truck, and so I was a delivery boy for delivering their soup and bread to the workers and miscellaneous items, small items, and did things like that mostly.
Mm.
And it worked there for about 3 months. Then I got a job at Edgewood Arsenal. Temporary job.
Mm-hmm.
in 1924, working the laundry. Worked there for about 2 months, and but I didn't fare too well in the steam room. It was cold weather, and Wisconsin had coals, head coals.
Mm.
So I resigned. First company job I had, and resigned it.
Mm.
So I was out for a while and worked around miscellaneous jobs, like storekeeping and one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the fall of the year, summer, you know, that summer I got of 27, I guess it was, yeah. Summer 27, I got a job on there, temporary job. It wound up becoming permanent, and I worked in a job retired in 1961.
Hmm.
We retired since 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to night school and studied engineering, and I retired as a mechanical engineer in research and development as a project engineer.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Had you seen a lot of changes out at the arsenal?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't know the place today. I'd go along there once in a while, but it's so changed that I...
Mm.
And same with that improvement, it's changed a lot. I used to remember that because my dad was a nice worker with him on the job as a boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, stay with him during the hours, working hours, and pick things in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was, it's changed. And the town of Abilene changed a lot, too. As I say, it was one street town.
Mm.
One sidewalk street. And it was when it developed up the main street, which I think we call Beretta Avenue today.
Mm.
And when we left Aberdeen, we came down here to Magnolia and lived there for about 3 years. And my dad bought the old shipping place over here on the corner of Route 7 and 152.
Mm.
And of course, my brother still owns the place. But my dad lived in that house until he died.
Mm-hmm.
He bought in 1927. 26 or 27, I forget which, 20, mm-hmm. I think 27, or early 27.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel very much effects of the Depression right around there, wasn't it?
I worked during the Depression, so I actually didn't feel it myself. I was fortunate to have a job, and it didn't pay, but I guess I got paid every 2 weeks for a camp or something, you know, and
mm-hmm.
it didn't hurt me.
Mm.
Matter of fact, I got married in 32.
You did?
Yeah.
Huh. Could you see very much effect of it that it had on people in Harford County?
I saw some, but I think the Depression was more of a state of mind and talk than it was of actual physical hurt.
Hmm.
And people were talking themselves into hurt.
Oh.
And oftentimes I saw this case where a man and wife would be working, and they didn't want to harm the ladders.
Uh-huh.
That's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I have seen some people who were really down and out, but and while I was working, they did have a method of taking care of local charity by taking up every pay, taking $5 or something like that. And we made about $22 a week as it was, but they collected from us to take care of people around Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
There was a few families around there.
Mm.
But it's like always like the like all the human cry, even though you contribute to those things, I knew some of the people who were down there and still they drive cars all in the neighborhood.
Mm.
And it makes you wonder about it, you know what I mean? Because
mm.
if I was down there, I'd certainly not drive a car, you know that?
Mm-hmm. Mm. What was this area like around here when you moved down?
Oh, this was very primitive. The roads were gravel roads, and they'd scrape about once every three times during the summer months. As soon as they scraped, they used to have the pure artillery down here, Edward Arsenal. I think they called it the 6th Steel or something like that, 6th Steel Artillery.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as soon as they scraped those roads, they'd rain a little bit, and they'd bring those artillery out here and cut them all up, and it'd be right back where they were at ruts.
Oh.
And particularly in the sandy portions, and so you had to straddle the ruts where those caissons made.
Mm.
So it was very primitive, and when it did start to put the McAdam roads down, they did it in phases about 1 mile a year. I remember the Emerson Road, you know, from up Route 24, where they call 24 now. Mm-hmm. That's the way that was finished off. It was a mile or so each year.
Hmm.
And this mountain road here, which the mountain road is going down up there now, that was the same way. They went up about a mile and then stopped, and it was dirt going up to Shooks's Corner.
Hmm.
You know where Shooks's Corner is?
Up at the college?
No, up, it's mountain road treatment now. That's up at the... Shooks Corner is a college, that's right. Black Gap. Black Gap is what you used to call that corner up there on Route 6, where the Boston ball is.
Oh, that's Black Gap?
The Black Gap. It used to be a haunted, area through there.
It was?
Oh, yeah. That's the name you'd see headless riders on horses and stuff like that.
Huh. Wonder where that came from.
I don't know. I heard that for years.
Huh.
Well, it's like how branch up here, Chiptune Yen Abbey, you know that is, don't you?
Vaguely, yeah.
Well, it's a branch from up there, and it's called Ha Ha Branch. They came and got a name from the person who laughed themselves to death. And they came, that's haunted up through there, too.
Oh.
Well, you got those old ghost stories all around the place.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't believe in that stuff.
Hmm. Well, now, by you all coming from Virginia, did the people of Maryland treat you okay, and they accepted you when you moved out here?
We came from the Valley of Virginia, Senator Valley, across the county where all my folks were from generations, mm-hmm. both my mother's people and my dad's people.
Hmm.
Well, when they first came here, we were outsiders. The boys had a hard time getting acclimated with the local boys. They always want to fight you and try to run you off. They said, we don't want you foreigners in here.
Hmm.
And that went on for about 6 months, and finally they got tired and they accepted us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they used to fight.
Hmm.
Just pick, and you provoke you into a fight and try to scare you off or something.
Hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah, you don't have that today. And of course, we talked, too, with a southern accent.
Mm-hmm.
Which today people don't have.
Mm.
So that they make fun of that.
Mm-hmm.
They make fun of that. And we weren't really well off people. My dad was a working man, and there were six of us, four boys and two girls, and I was the oldest, and my mother didn't buy us by keeping us in clean clothes and patched clothes, but we didn't have the finery of some people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did have one thing that hurt me one time though. Went to a Methodist. I was Methodist. I used to go to Methodist Sunday school, you know, in University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So I started up here. I went down to the main Methodist down in the downtown of Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me they wanted us to go first up to the upper end of town. So there was two Methodist churches in town. North, so called, and ME South. I said, you take the ME South, that's good for you. Your kind. And that kind of hurts, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made us not ever mess with me.
Huh.
And I always had that back in my mind. I was only about 11 years old then. That was stuck in me as a fun way for Christians to witness, really.
So you went down to which church was that?
Well, we went to next to the Bino Raiders track. So you said that the church up there. I think now it's the Lutheran church, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Bell Avenue. Bell Avenue, as you come down from Bell, as you cross the tracks to the right.
Oh.
And to the left as you cross the tracks.
Hmm. Isn't that something?
It is something.
Huh. Now what did you do for entertainment?
What did we do for entertainment as mm-hmm. kids? Well, we used to play sand lot baseball. Did a lot of that. Shoot upside, you know, and play ball, and then fall the year, play football, and at the school, take hours, go out and eat on the school field or in someone's big yard, play football.
Mm.
Scrub football, I guess you call it, and that wasn't that real stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I used to like to hunt. I did a little bit of hunting for squirrels and rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
And,
how did you get involved with the archery club?
Well, There's a friend of mine, George Miller. He lived in Bel Air until a year ago, and he moved to New York to be near his daughter, Edith Wright. George Miller had started talking to me about archery. And he said, let's form a club. Well, I was kind of interested in archery at the time. And this is about 1939 now. And we talked about it for about a year. He was superintendent down where I was, a supervisor, one of the, in the engineering department, mm-hmm. in which I worked. And it was in the talk stage. So, but after about a year, we finally got more down to base tax. So he talked with me, and I in terms with Carl Brown, a few others, George Hammond Belair, George S. Hammond. And we held a meeting in Belair High School. And I get that date right here somewhere. We, 1939, except March the 7th.
Mm.
March the 7th, we held a general meeting to discuss maybe the means of organizing a club. And through this effort, information got around that the town of Belair that we were interested, and Judge Preston, I think it was, he got rid of it, and he said, well, we saw our club there, why don't we just reorganize it? And so we carry on the same day, because we called our name, you know, and another. And Judge Harlan, that's who it was. Mm-hmm. He was still, and he was the president of the old club. Can I read this one?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says here that in March 1739, in their high school building, 27 persons attended the meeting. At this meeting, Judge Jerry Robinson moved to get Judge William H. Harlan, who was 88 years old, to attend the next meeting, as he was the secretary of the original Harford Archery Club. At the meeting held on March 21st, 1939, with Judge Harlan being present, and as he was one of the officers of the old club and was empowered to take in all new candidates as members of the original Harford Archery Club, in those books of the first years of the club's life was turned over by Judge Harlan to the new secretary of the reorganized club. And it is from the above action that today the Harford Archery Club can claim existence since its founding in 1878 and the oldest continuous archery club in the United States, as far as can be learned. Now the officers of the reorganized club were elected as follows. President, Mr. Carl H. Brown. Vice President, Ms. Barbara Campbell. Secretary, Mr. George A. Miller. Treasurer, Mr. George P. Simmons. A shooting range was obtained on the property of Mr. Herbert Hanna on North Main Street. This range used 3 years. The range was then moved to property of Ralph Morgan, also North Main Street. During the years of 1939 and 1940, we had such famous archers as to attend the club meetings as Major Arthur Blackburn, who is the Dean of Maryland Archers, Dr. Robert P. Elmer, an authority on archery of national note, as well as champion of national honors, and Mr. Lewis C. Smith, Secretary of the National Archery Association. The club's activities during the war years varied, but still the annual business meetings were held. There were interesting programs provided for those at these meetings. See what in the world I'm thinking. There was 5 members still living, along with Judge Harlan here,
mm-hmm.
and they were Judge Henry, Judge Henry D. Holland, William H. Holland, and J.M.T. Finney, that's Dr. J.M.T. Finney, and Mrs. Cornelia Bradford, and Mrs. A.R.T. Lackey. Those five people were still living.
Hmm.
They were pretty aged, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they took part in the original shooting of the club. Now, I thought there was a program or a schedule of one of the shoots back there in October 1879.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's some of the people you mentioned here, see?
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Miss P. Richardson, Miss M.D. Mitchell, Miss M.A. Archer, Miss D. Down, Miss B. Webster, Robert Archer, Miss Norris H.W. Archer Jr., Miss B. Fernandez, Miss Nanny Archer, Miss K. Richardson, J.S. Shriver,
mm-hmm.
Miss B. Fletcher, Miss M. Stump, Mrs. M. Stump,
mm-hmm.
Miss C. Webster, Sydney Brand, Mrs. J.T.C. Hopkins, Miss Fernandez, Miss Lee, Miss Archer, J.T.C. Hopkins, Miss E. Archer, Miss Dallum, Miss L. Giddings, J. Edwin Webster.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what's editorial? Let's see, it has locals, telegraphic, editorial.
Mm-hmm. That's the groups that they shot under.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the editorial was a local paper, which would be the Aegis as a forerunner of it. I mean, not forerunner, but present day Aegis. Grandparents of this. What did you say, editorial, yeah.
Mm. Hmm. Major Dallum, Miss Ida Webster, H.D. Harlan, Miss Lily Pugh, J.T.C. Hopkins, Miss K. Gallagher, Miss Maria Norris, Ed Fernandez, Herman Stump Jr., Miss W. Constable, W.G. Scott, W.H. Harlan.
Huh. Well, there was a lot of people in Mission were from Bellarians at the time, you know.
Huh?
And the first meeting was held of the early club,
mm-hmm.
was held on August 14th, 1878.
Hmm.
And it was held, and I'll put it like this, in pursuit of a call for the foundation of an archer club, the prospective archers assembled at the place and time above named and on motion by Mr. Van Bibber, Mr. Herman Stump, Jr., was called to the chair, and Stevenson Archer of John, chosen secretary. On motion by Major Dallum, the chair was authorized to appoint a committee of six to draft rules and regulations and for the government of the club. Whereupon the chair named a subcommittee the following: Mrs. R. H. Mitchell, Mrs. M. B. Stump, Miss Lizzie Archer, Major Down, Mr. Van Bibber. Now this Van Bibber here, it was Dr. Van Bibber's father. I don't know if you knew Mr. Van Bibber, Dr. Van Bibber or not. I didn't know him.
Hmm.
That was his father.
Mm-hmm.
And General Phelps. Said committee then obtained for consultation on the motion of Mr. Holland a recess for 1/2 hour taken, and at the expiration of which time the club pursuing the business which it had assembled. And General Phelps, on the part of the committee above named, submitted the names of the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the Constitution, and actually it's pretty much like the modern Constitution. There's
mm-hmm.
no difference in it. And we didn't copy the Constitution either. It turns out it corresponds to the same general wording. Which I think is true. Oh, and here's an interesting fact too. The National Archery Association was organized in 1879. And we preceded by 1 year.
Hmm.
See, this is national, the national.
Oh, yeah.
Founded in 1879.
Huh.
So we got over in the National Association.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. If you want to continue, if you want to consider the fact that we are the oldest by virtue of the fact that we said that one of us by this one member turning over the effects and voting in the members of being received in the old club.
Mm-hmm.
It's, they're lawyers, so they all knew what they were talking about, mm-hmm. you see, even though they were pre-agent.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty much what the club. Then we've had a lot of fun with the club over the years. We had members to come and go, and right now we have about 12 supporting members. We've done them down due to deaths and to moving away and whatnot, and so that's what we got left. And mm-hmm. young people don't seem to be interested too much, and we tried to advertise in the paper and whatnot, but they didn't want to take part. And here was the first field we met on. This is that one on the field of the Southern State Chair in the North Main Street, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This belonged to Herb Hanna.
Oh.
Across from his house at the time. And that's George Miller, which is missing here, and Brown. And Miss Miller is his daughter, and Mrs. Miller. And Donna, he's living in Bel Air. I can't think of his name right now. He has Hayes. Donna Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's another of them shooting from Maine. This is me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
George Miller, and married couple.
Hmm.
Yeah, good many pictures here, really. Mm-hmm. These are some pictures taken up at Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in the national shoots.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And let's see, Judge Harlan was one of the original ones that passed it on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the one that was at the turned over the minutes book. And here is a copy of the minutes, the original minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You want to take that with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't. Better not. I mean, these are very valuable to you. Hmm. Isn't that something?
You can take that and that's that. This is right here. How about this? You can have that. Come on.
So what would the archery club do? It would have shoots?
Well, we would have a meeting in the spring and set up a schedule, shooting schedule for the season. And for instance, here is a typical schedule. See how they set it up? It's from May through September.
Oh.
And we'd have the fourth is description and use of equipment. May 11th, instruction and practice at close range. May the 20th, that's to take care of novice, people who don't know how to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Practice at close range. And June 8th, practice close range and scoring. See, it's a lot of technique to it. It's not as simple as it seems on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of practice, a lot of know-how to get involved in the stuff really properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we practice 40 yards and American round. Now the American round is the standard round that all target archers use. It's 30 arrows at 60 yards, 30 at 50 yards, and 30 at 40 yards. and as those 90 errors are tallied on a scorecard, and whoever naturally comes up with the highest number is going to be a winner for that shooter that day. Then the American, these are known as American rounds. See, that figure, 60, 15, 40, is known as a single American round. And it's really going to shoot a double, but a double is pretty, it's a pretty energy consuming bit of a lot of energy. But think of one round, one American round here, on the errors, is equivalent to shoving one ton of coal from the equivalent to shoving one ton of coal from the other side down the chute into the basin.
Ooh.
That's how much energy it takes. So this is a typical, and here is the classification for class A, B, C, and D. Men who shoot 75 and over would be A class shooter. And 450 to 574 B, and 325 to 449 C, and 324 under D. And equivalent round for women. Women don't shoot quite as strenuous bows as men. These are various people involved in the shooting. Now this range is right here at the behind that top one over there. We shoot it up a number of years until they took that over. That's Jack Langerfeld, a contractor in Towson, and he is being presented some kind of trophy there that day. And that's my daughter when she was here. With my daughter, my son shot, this is my son here, until he was about 12 years old and he gave it up. But he was a good shooter. He could really hit those things. And that's Mr. Monroe. He was a longtime member, which he's now passed on. Now Homer Walter, I'm going to talk to him. He's been one of the outstanding members for a number of years. I picture him here somewhere. Well, here he is right here. We were out on a field trip that day shooting in deer hunting. My wife is, my son is really too, see? I was down near Isle of Point, down in the neighborhood. And one Thanksgiving we would shoot for a live turkey. We wouldn't shoot the turkey, but we'd shoot squirrels, and we would get the highest, we would take the turkey home. They couldn't stop there because too much trouble to kill the turkey and clean it. Here's a picture of Homer. This Nico, he lived in Bromer, and he made these bows. Matter of fact, we've got a couple of that he made. And it was a distinct bow from any other bow he's ever made. He's been dead for a number of years. And he and his wife was in the business, they had an upstairs loft that they worked in in a house in Baltimore. These are just newspaper items in the senior club, mostly. some of the technicalities about a boat, the mechanics of a boat, dynamics. Here I am playing Brad Jones on one of our shooters. Something we've got that the air swimmer. Hunger can be very interesting and nuclear problem, very valuable to it. Her name is Ann Marson. I met her in national tournaments. And some nice people in the archery. Like the East Coast is, you know. Need some fun. There I am, Homer and Clyde French. He's out in Iowa. Here was a display I had on up in the hardware store in Bel Air one year. I guess there wasn't too much stuff in this, do you? There's my wife. She's not... Where are they coming from? Let's see. They look there. She's right now out in Illinois visiting a daughter of mine.
Oh.
Ours. There she is. She's the other one. Here's a woman putting something on me. Just like I had something to do, I guess. There's my wife, I'm getting her the ropes. I would have a lot of fun. You have any children?
No. I'm not married.
Here's a group of us. There's another group in the meeting. And this lady is from the Oriole Archers in Baltimore. So, anything else? I might say in recent years we hadn't had too much activity. Matter of fact, we should hold an annual meeting, so-called annual meeting, pretty shortly to keep the thing in a state of organization. Even though we don't have shoots, by holding a meeting annually, you do keep the continuity of the thing going. Nothing is important to do that. For posterity's sake, nothing else. And we have a field fund that's got over $1,000 in it. I think it's up around $1,300. That's been put there through little donations here, there, and what have you. And in a regular checking account, there's, I don't know, Homer's is the treasurer of it. So, I just don't know what the amounts are right now, but the money is important. And when we got started back in 1939, there was a defunct Isaac Fulton League. You're familiar with those in Bel Air, and up in that in the Harper County, at least up around Darlington. and it was defunct, and they had around $100 and some. So they donated $100 and some to the Harvard Archer Club, uniform, reorganized and uniform, so they get started. Because these targets cost about, right now they cost about $35-$40 a piece. And the faces cost $2 or $3. So you see, it's a good bit of burning expense connected with them. Then you get ready to buy these medals, and you got to have something incentive for winners. All those cost money. And you can't hardly charge a shooting fee. Why would you charge a shooting fee? You can't, it's pretty hard to make it come out right. Financially. And the dues are so nominal that you can't make the dues pay for it. But you see, from a standpoint of finances, it's hard to keep things going that way. So it takes a lot of work on people who are dedicated. Homer is one of them. I used to, until my health got bad, I used to do a lot of you know, the so-called laborious work on the field, and couldn't get the field up, keep it clean, keep the grass down, and line and all that, you know. So I don't know why people can't seem to be interested today, but they're not. You'll come in around hunting season and shoot for a couple of weeks, and all they're doing is get practice and get some know-how to go out hunting. And I don't think that's very good, but that's what they do. But as far as sustained interest in target archery, it's pretty hard to find. You've got to be dedicated.
Well, isn't it it was sort of a socially prominent kind of thing in the past, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, even in the beginning, back in 1878, when all these Bolarians that you named, they were all big, sort of big, it's like the Thursday Night Club in Annapolis, you know, you've heard of that. Well, it's that kind of deal. Back years and years and years ago, even back in Kroner times, men used to have Tuesday night clubs and Thursday night clubs. They'd congregate just to shoot the bull, so to speak. And I think the archery was good that I like that. Now, a lot of our members were eating members. They'd come to banquets and stuff, but they wouldn't come to shoots. Well, we didn't mind, as long as they were congenial and whatnot, you know. So it was fun. But you do like to have shooting because they have competition. Of course, you shoot by yourself. You never do learn all the ins and outs of archery. It's a place where there's never a graduate. Because there's always room for improvement and always room for new eyes creep in and to also to develop your stance and your habits to keep bad habits from when you're shooting stance, you see, in shooting form. So easy to develop bad shooting habits, and that would throw your score down. To keep your score up, you got to keep at it. It's like any kind of sport, athletics, you got to keep behind it. And it's a sort of social thing, and I'm sure a lot of these early Valeria people were in there, not so much for the archery's sake, because they didn't prove too well with their scores, but rather for their sociability and for their gift and gab that they like to express. Now, there's a lot of things in archery that, England was one of the prime countries to foster archery. Every man back in the days of Robin Hood, so-called, in that period of time, every man had to have a bow and arrow and had to practice his archery in his yard, and to keep it like a militia, like a civilian military service, to be ready in case they call on to defend their province or go to war in Europe with whatever the king would send them or the powers to be. And we have a lot of words that are handed down to be used today, like yard. And the word yard is from archery. You used to have an arrow called a yard arrow. It's shooting in the yard. There's big greens, you know, and it was a certain length. It was just a length about a yard long. You've seen women measure stuff a yard. And so he used to say yards are length, but they dropped the word error and they said yards length. Mm-hmm. So they keep that.
Mm-hmm.
In golf, you call a four. It's a aftermath of archery. In archery, if someone was right across in front of you, you holler, hee hee. That was seen as saying, yeah, get that sergeant, we're going to help you with an arrow, see? That, when you hear that word, that would cause the one to back off, and that's where you're talking to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember now, but there's a lot of terms that we use unconsciously in the vocabulary that you can attribute to archery, either directly and indirectly.
Mm.
It's an interesting subject once you get into it, really study it. And some people have. I got Dr. Elmer there. Dr. Elmer has written several lengthy books on archery in his lifetime, because he's been dead for 30 or 40 years. But during his lifetime, he had written a number of books. As a matter of fact, one is called the called Archery. It's called the Archery's Bible. Up until his death, it was taken as gospel.
Yeah.
Of course, since in those days, and even since we've organized, archery's gone through a big change in the technical sense. The bow is different, and the method of handling the bow is entirely different than what it was when I first started out.
Hmm.
So we've put on schools. I've gone over to Edgewood School and instructed over there at times past. And one week my wife and I spent a week up at the camp up there, at the, what's it called up there, at the rocks?
Oh, Romita?
Well, that's another name you said. That's a, maybe that's what they call it now, but some years ago it was just young people. So we went up there as the archery instructors and had a group to take part.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids like it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get them started, they like to go down with it, you know.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.